Welcome back to Calling Hours. We're really excited you guys are joining us today. Today, our guest is Mike Lake with Matthews Aurora. Mike is their director of partner growth, and I am really excited for this conversation. Mike's name was one that I learned within a few days of starting at Homesteaders. He is just such a huge player at Matthews. He's part of a big piece of our casket price protection program that we offer in partnership with Matthews Aurora. He's very embedded in their sales operations and kind of managing to their sales goals and their sales plans. And he is just a lovely human being. So I'm excited for you guys to get to know him a little bit. I'm excited to get to spend the next few minutes talking to him and picking his brain because he's got a lot of really good ideas and a lot of good things to share. So welcome, Mike. Thank you for making time for this. We really appreciate you being here.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be on your podcast. I've heard lots of great things about it, and I'm looking forward to having our conversation today.
Yeah. Well, I often start with this question with our guests, but what attracted you to the funeral space? Tell me a little bit about kind of how you ended up in funeral service. I know you didn't start out in caskets, but what attracted you to the space initially?
Yeah, so growing up, my dad was a funeral director in South Central Kansas, and I spent a lot of time at the funeral home. You know, when I was younger, you know, a sick day didn't mean getting to stay at home and having a great time at the house. It was going to work with dad and sitting in the back office all day. And so it really made you think about, am I really that sick or not? Or should I just go to school and have more fun than sitting there? You know, the morning was not so bad when the game shows were on, but the afternoons seemed like they went on forever since the only thing to watch on television at that time in that era was soap operas. So That's you know, just being around the funeral home and being around my dad and the other funeral directors really kind of attracted me to the business. I enjoyed watching them help families, especially as I got older and was, you know, maybe helping a little bit more services, et cetera. Just watching them help families and what they did every day was really kind of what drew me in and made me think about the funeral business as a career.
So interesting. It's similar to the way that I grew up as well. Tell me more about that funeral home. What was it like? What was the community like? How did it serve the families?
Yeah, it was a small, I grew up in a small town, Arkansas City, Kansas. We pronounce it Arkansas, but it's spelled like Arkansas. And town of about 15, 16,000 people, about an hour south and a little bit east of Wichita, right on the Kansas-Oklahoma border. And, you know, relatively small firm, but busy. And so, you know, dad was very busy, you know, going to work every day and working with families and helping them. And it was just a good, you know, at that time, a good close community. And I enjoyed growing up there. It was a great place to grow up and to just go to school and learn and be ready to go out into the world. I enjoyed that time of my life a lot.
You mentioned that you, as you got older, you started doing some things in the funeral home, helping out. I'm curious what your first job at the funeral home was.
My first job at the funeral home was mowing grass, washing cars, and vacuuming the carpet. Those were the three things that I was allowed to do. The mowing of the grass and the washing the cars wasn't so bad. It was the vacuuming of the carpet. I did not like that at all. To this day, I will vacuum only in extreme emergencies. The funeral home, the building, as you came in the front door, there was a kind of a large foyer and kind of gathering area prior to going into the chapel. So it was kind of a rectangular shape and that, you know, very long. And so the vacuum cleaner was one of those commercial vacuum cleaners that I think a lot of funeral homes have. I had to vacuum in very straight lines. So all the way up and all the way back on the same line, as close to the wall as possible, scoot over and do it again. And if it wasn't done perfectly, I had to do it over again. And let's just say that I rarely got it right the first time. I don't like to vacuum to this day because of that. I can still hear my dad telling me, nope, do it again. So yeah, it's very interesting. But those were the first jobs I had in the funeral home.
I have an older sister, and when she was old enough, my dad had her mowing the lawn, and it's still a point of contention for her that by the time I got old enough, my dad had a lawn service. And so I never actually had to mow the lawn, but my job that I hated was actually washing the cars. I could never get the windows streak free. Wow. This is a true story. A few weeks ago, I deep cleaned my car, my personal car. Mm-hmm. And I texted my dad after, and I'm like, can I still submit a time card for this? Cause it took me 2 hours. Yeah. Unfortunately, he's like, no, that does not work anymore. But, there's something about working in the funeral home at a young age and mm-hmm. the precision, like vacuuming in those straight lines, getting the streaks off of the window, like the level of work ethic and getting it perfect, I think sets you up for a lot of success later in life and perhaps also some mental health issues later on down the road.
It certainly makes you pay attention to the details and then, you know, almost not like paying attention to the details as you get older too. But I know that a lot of us have had that experience. You know, one of the other things that just occurred to me when you're talking about, you know, your dad and the mowing service, I was the oldest of three, and I think all three of us actually mowed the grass at the funeral home. He didn't start having a lawn service until all of us were out of the, you know, out of the house, out of high school. So that was interesting. But one of the things about the community that I grew up in, being a small community, is that I think it was my senior year in high school for prom. Our high school had little contests on the types of cars that you arrived in. And these cars could be actual cars. They could be tractors. They could be, you know, trucks. They could be kind of any, they could be bicycles, anything. And I think my senior year in high school, me and my date, who's my wife now, went with two other friends, and we arrived in the back of the funeral coach, and my dad got out and opened the door. And when you walk in there, the president of the school board, who was also a dentist in town, would interview the kids coming in. And so they, you know, he asked us a few questions, and he's like, well, so how is it riding back there? Is it pretty comfortable? And we kind of all laughed and said, no, it was in, you know, late April. So it was pretty warm in southern Kansas at that time. And we laughed about how there was no air conditioning back there. And that seemed to get a pretty good laugh out of him and the crowd that was around watching all the kids come in. So that was just kind of the community that we grew up in and lived in and enjoyed being in. So
that's awesome. For us, it was the last day of school, your senior year, that they would bring. And I begged my dad, like, Dad, just one day, let me go in the hearse. And he would not let me do that. But that might have something to do with the fact that I may have dented one of the funeral cars on one of my excursions to wash it. Yeah. And he was a little leery about me driving them after that.
I can see that.
But yeah, it's interesting because you grew up in the funeral mm-hmm. business. You grew up working in the funeral home, but you didn't pursue funeral directing. You went to school for business management. Yes. Talk me through that decision-making process.
Yeah. So when I went to college, I went and had this idea that I wanted to, you know, go into the business school and move on and do something different. But it was interesting as I started, I got my actual first job out of college was, I had a sales territory with Gallo Winery in, Tulsa, Oklahoma. And so I, you know, went around to different grocery stores for the first part of my job, selling Bartles and James wine coolers to, grocery stores and convenience stores and those types of things, and then moved into our quote unquote wine division and had a sales territory in South Tulsa and then Southeast Oklahoma. And I really enjoyed that. I learned a lot. It was fun to do that and to be out on my own and to experience that. But I just really kept thinking about, you know, the funeral business. I knew I didn't want to be a funeral director. I think the main reason for that is that I don't mind working and working hard and working a lot, but I like to have structure around my time. And as we all know, funeral directors have zero structure around their time because, you know, people don't die during the 8 to 5 business hours. They die all the time, you know, at all hours of the night. And so funeral directors are really on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And I knew that just didn't fit me. It didn't fit my personality and the way I like to do things. But I really enjoyed being in the funeral business. And so coming back to it and working for a pre-need company as my first kind of job in the funeral business was really nice because it allowed me the opportunity to participate in the industry that was good to me and my family. It gave us everything that we needed and a lot of things that we wanted in life. And to be a part of that was really nice. And to be a part of helping funeral homes help their families was something that just really appealed to me. And so that's kind of why I ended up on the side of the funeral industry that I did. It was just because of who I am as a person and recognizing that. There were several times that I talked to my dad about, hey, you know, maybe I should go back to school and become a funeral director. And just the more he and I talked, the more he said, you know, Mike, you're on the right side of this business. You enjoy it and you work well with other funeral homes and you should just stay there. So I kind of kept listening to his advice throughout the years.
And you eventually ended up at Matthews. I do have to ask, are caskets easier or harder to sell than wine coolers?
Oh, gosh. You know, it's interesting. I think probably caskets are easier to sell because it's just been so long ago. I mean, this was back in 1994, 95 when I started at Gallo Winery. So I've forgotten everything I learned about that stuff. And so I think it's easier, you know, just because I'm much more familiar with caskets and this business now than I ever was of the wine business. So.
Well, you know, there's consistent demand, right? Everyone is going to need a casket or urn at some point in their life.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. And, you know, I enjoyed it. I did learn a lot working for Gallo Winery and working in that retail sales environment. A lot of things that I kind of recognize today when I'm working with our salespeople and they're talking about merchandising, you know, selection room floors, whether it be physical floors or digital floors, a lot of the same concepts apply. And so it's interesting to kind of keep thinking back over my time at Gallo and recognizing that these concepts are pretty universal and they work in the retail environment when we go into whether it's into a grocery store or a wine store or into a clothing store, the concepts are really fairly similar across that business and they really apply to our business as well.
Yeah, I think that's true. A good salesperson can sell anything, but the very best sell something they're passionate about and they bring that level of emotion and enthusiasm to it that you can't really manufacture. And I think that's why when you find good salespeople, particularly in the business that we're in, you want to hold on to them because this is one of those industries that really rewards that passion and that energy and that enthusiasm. You joined Matthews back before it wasn't Matthews. It was still just right. Aurora. What attracted you to Aurora at the time?
I started with Aurora back in 2011, and I had spent some time at some pre-need companies. And then in between pre-need companies, I'd moved on to a different industry for about 4 or 5 years and then came back. And really what attracted me to Aurora at the time was the opportunity to manage one of the programs that I still work with, and that is, our price protection plan partnership with Homesteaders. And it was interesting to me to have the opportunity to work on the at-need side of the business per se with a casket company, but still be focused on where most of my career in the funeral business had been, which was on the pre-need side, and really helping our sales team leverage the power of price protection with their customers and with our partner Homesteaders was really what attracted me to that opportunity.
Yeah, it is an interesting pairing, you know, casket sales and pre-need. I obviously, as the vice president of marketing at Homesteaders, I hope every single person listening to this already knows what P3, mm-hmm. what our casket price protection plan is. If not, I might need to relook at what we're doing from our marketing. But in case there is someone who doesn't, can you give us like a 30-second summary of what the program is and what the benefit is to funeral homes?
Yeah, sure. So the price protection plan is simply the opportunity when using Matthews Aurora products and Homesteaders Life Company for the pre-need program to essentially protect the price of the casket at today's price versus paying for it what you would pay in the future when servicing that pre-need policy. So it's really the opportunity to pay today's price for something that you're going to deliver in the future and really reap those savings and really essentially protect the profitability of your pre-need program and your funeral home. And so that's why I believe, and I think most of the people that work at our company and your company believe that this is the one of the best opportunities for funeral homes to really take control of their business and maybe even take control of the second largest piece of that guaranteed funeral when they sell that pre-need plan to their families in their community and protect the price of that casket or urn and really, again, protect the price of the pre-need or the profitability of the pre-need program and their funeral home.
I think for us, it's such a huge difference maker for the funeral homes. You know, when you talk about pre-need and you talk about a pre-need becoming at-need, and then you have a conversation about shortfalls, and there's always that concern, is the pre-need going to cover the cost mm-hmm. of the at-need? A lot of times our business stays on the book 9-10 years, mm-hmm. and that's a lot of inflation over time. And we want to make sure that we're we're protecting those dollars and we're making good financial investments for the funeral home. And that casket freeze is a huge part of that. It really does help offset a major portion. And it's not just caskets, it's also urns. And it does make a huge difference for our customers, for the way that we talk about pre-need, the benefit that it has to the funeral home. It's essentially guaranteed growth from that first day. You know that you're gonna be protected on the inflation on that casket. Especially as we've seen inflation prices increase, casket prices increase over the last few years in particular, it really has been a difference maker for a lot of funeral homes.
Mm-hmm. It has helped them. It's helped them in their businesses. And as I talk to customers who have really experienced the program over, you know, several years, they see that savings helping their business on a daily basis. You know, like you said, there's always the concern when they sell a pre-need policy to a family member and that person, you know, lives for 9, 10 or more years, that is this policy going to cover my current prices and help me maintain the level of service that I like to provide to my families? And there are so many variabilities inside of that pre-need policy in you know, time, inflation, you name it, there's the variability that comes across with that. And so being able to not have to worry about what is the price increase on the casket or urn for this policy, and knowing that, you know, if I paid $1,000 for that casket in, you know, today, in 5 years, 10 years, I'll pay $1,000 essentially for that casket in the future, really brings some peace of mind to the manager or the owner of that business. And it helps them then be able to focus on delivering that service to their families the way that they want to and the way that they like to and that they're good at. And it's just really kind of taking away some of those additional stressors that can put pressure on business owners or managers. And that's what it's here for. And it really does, when you talk to those folks who've been in the program for several years, you can see that and hear that in what they say and how they, you know, carry themselves when they think about their pre-need programs. Mm-hmm. They know that, hey, this is, you know, I may not completely cover a shortfall with the price protection plan, but it's going to be manageable. And I can feel comfortable in the fact that I can continue to offer this program to my community and help them, you know, pre-plan and pre-arrange and all the benefits that go with that, and feel comfortable that I'm going to be able to deliver that service and maintain the, you know, maintain my standards, because I know that I'm going to not have a huge shortfall mm-hmm. on that policy.
Yeah, it really can change the entire attitude and discussion around pre-need and you know, the concern of, do we guarantee, do we not guarantee? It just makes that a much more comfortable jumping off point for funeral homes. Right. I know you mentioned you joined Matthews in 2011. A lot has happened in the funeral space since then. What have you noticed as some of the biggest changes in the landscape around casket and urns? Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, hate to state the obvious here, but the transition from burial to cremation has obviously continued to grow, really from my first job in the industry back in 1995 to today. It's changed tremendously. Now I'm, you know, more people are choosing cremation versus burial. And so I know that that's put a lot of pressure on our funeral home partners to maintain their revenue and maintain their profitability so that they can be there for the families. And so I think that's probably the biggest change that I've seen when it comes to caskets and urns and working for a, you know, quote unquote casket company. That's really the biggest thing that I've seen over the last, you know, over my career and even over the last, you know, 12, 13 years that I've been with Aurora and Matthews Aurora.
Do you think the way that funeral providers talk about urns and caskets with consumers has changed the way that they sell those products?
I do. I think that our funeral home partners are really becoming much more process oriented around working with their families when it comes to cremation. And they are working to present all the options that cremation families have. Many times cremation families know that they want to do cremation, but they don't know really what that means beyond just choosing that mode of disposition, if you will. And still being able to have services and have visitations and those types of things are really not something that they think about, but they do want and need. And I know that we offer a program called I'll Remember You for our funeral home partners to use, and that really just makes it a really simple way to present the different choices that families have when choosing cremation, whether they want to have full visitation with the body present, and then instead of going to the cemetery, we go to the crematory after the services, or having that memorial service with the urn present, or just choosing a private family goodbye so the immediate family has the opportunity to say goodbye and to have that closure, really helps the family move down that path of grieving. Although grieving is not a linear process, I certainly understand that as I've gotten older, but there is a path and there is a process that people move through, and being able to have that opportunity to say goodbye, even if it's just in a private family gathering, is really important. And I think our funeral homes and our funeral home partners have really gotten very good at working with families and presenting those options and utilizing things like I'll Remember You or whatever process that they use has been very helpful for them.
I think cremation has created a lot of creativity in the funeral space. I was at a conference a few weeks ago, and one of the presenters had lost a child, a little girl named Madeline, when she was a baby, and she brings Madeline with her when she travels. Mm. And this urn that has her picture on it and her name, and she brought it and she set it down on the table and she talked about Madeline, and everyone in the room said, "Hi, Madeline, we're so glad you're here." And that's not possible without the level of creativity that the casket and urn providers have brought to funeral service. That would not have been something that could have happened 20 years ago. You know, when I was growing up in the funeral home, everyone was buried, and there, you know, you would never think of bringing a casket with you when you travel. But cremation really does bring a lot of opportunity for casket and urn providers like Matthew's to come in and provide a solution that gives that portability, gives that flexibility, makes them feel so much closer and much nearer to us after they're gone.
Yep, I would agree with that. I think that the level of creativity has certainly increased significantly around cremation, and just the types of services that here our funeral home partners talk about that they've delivered to families via cremation are very interesting. I think just having, you know, your story is a classic example of that. I mean, I think that the ability to do that and to be able to honor that her child is really an interesting story and a great way to showcase what can be done with cremation if we just kind of open our minds and allow people to use their creativity to create a meaningful service.
We talked a little bit a few minutes ago about sales process, and that, mm-hmm. you know, selling wine coolers isn't really that different than selling preneed, isn't really that different than selling caskets. You've been in sales for about 3 decades now. You started when you were 12 years old, so you got a really good head start. Yeah. I would love to hear the best piece of sales advice you've ever received, or maybe a few tips that you've received over the years that have been really helpful to you.
Yeah, I think the biggest one and is just really understanding that when you are working with a customer, especially in our business, the selling process is comparably very extended. It takes a lot of time to walk through the idea of, you know, making a change to begin working with Matthew's Aurora, or making a change to begin working with a company like Homesteaders. That process takes a lot more time than maybe it does to speak to a grocery store manager about putting a display of Bartles and James wine coolers out on the end cap. And so really taking the opportunity to build the relationship with that person, but then also knowing how to transition that from a relationship to a business conversation is key. And so really asking good questions and learning about that person's business and what they want to accomplish, because everyone's objective, while it may seem similar, is always different. And so understanding that and then being able to take the solutions that our company or whatever company you're working for or selling for and applying them in a personal way to that owner or manager is really the key. And it really just takes the discipline to not try and rush the process, to ask the questions, to understand, and to have those conversations with that owner or manager so that when you do go back to them and present to them why they should begin working with your company, you are tailoring it to what is important to them. And I think that's really the biggest thing that I've learned through my career. And it's odd to hear somebody say 3 decades, but as I was rounding up slightly. Yeah. So as I was thinking about it before we got on our podcast this morning, it's like, oh, wow, it really has been that long. That's probably one of the biggest thing that I've learned throughout my time in the funeral business, just really taking the time to listen. I think our customers, our funeral directors, do a great job with that. They do listen to their families very well, and they deliver services that really are impactful to their families. And I think we on the vendor side of the business, if you will, really need to take a lesson from them and just take the time to listen and to understand what is important to that particular customer.
Yeah, I love that. It is absolutely a relationship business, and that listening, that fact finding, that level of curiosity, like almost mm-hmm. like a journalistic intent when you're sitting mm-hmm. across from a funeral director trying to talk to them about casket sales, or you're sitting across from a family trying to talk to them about their loved one's funeral, mm-hmm. being able to ask the questions and gather the information as much as you can and then do something with it that's meaningful. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is really the heart of what we do in funeral
absolutely.
Service. I know you grew up in the funeral business. You grew mm-hmm. up in funeral service. I'm sure, have attended many, many funerals. Mm-hmm. What's been the most meaningful service that you've attended? What stands out in your mind?
I think the most meaningful service that I've attended is, you know, maybe just going and attending some of my friends, their parents' services, et cetera, and maybe knowing who that person was on a, you know, at a very high level. But obviously knowing my friend very well and sitting in the chapel or in the church or even at the graveside service and listening to what other people had to say about that person and leaving that funeral or that memorial service and knowing them maybe almost as well as I know my friend has that to me, those have been the best services that I've attended and been a part of. And so those are the types of services that I would want for me or for my family. And when we've had deaths in our family, that's what we've tried to accomplish, is to celebrate that person, but make sure we tell that the story of who they were and what they were about, so that the folks that are there just supporting me or my brother knew my mom or my dad as well as we did. And that's what we strive for. And so that's what we hope that we can help funeral directors do on a daily basis.
That's absolutely lovely. I love that perspective. The idea that the funeral isn't just for those who knew the deceased, but those who are tangentially connected and have one last opportunity to get to know this person. It's such a beautiful approach to a service. I really like that. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't have any other substantive questions for you beyond that, but we do ask two questions of every podcast guest before we let them leave. The first one is, what are you reading right now?
I think the book that I'm reading right now, or most recently read, is and have still kind of looking at, and I'm probably a little behind the times with this, but Killers of the Flower Moon. Mm. You know, it's been out for quite a while, and there's been a movie made about it, and I haven't watched the movie, and I don't know if that I want to, because I really enjoyed the book so much that I don't want the movie to ruin it for me. But I just really enjoyed that story. I guess it's not really a story, that it's a part of our history and happened. And growing up in our Kansas City, Kansas, you know, 3 miles north of the Oklahoma border, a 25-minute drive south, I'm in Ponca City, where you have the Marlin Mansion and mm. Conoco. And, you know, those towns, Pawhuska and some of those other places, are within 30 or 40 minute drive of where I grew up, and have driven through those areas many times. And so it was a very interesting book for me to read and to learn about. I know that growing up, I didn't learn about that, about what happened with the, you know, finding oil on the Indian reservations and then kind of how that all played out. But it was very interesting to read that book and to learn about that part of our history.
I was just looking at a New York Times list of the 100 best books ever written, and that book was on the list, and I've not read it. I was actually kind of appalled at how few of the books that they had on that list I've actually read. I read a lot, and apparently I'm not reading good books, but I'm going to add that. It's already on my list. I'm going to move it closer to the top because you did a great job of selling me on it. I can tell that you work in sales.
Yeah, I would hate to look at that list, because there's a pretty good chance that Killers of the Flower Moon is the only book that I've read off of that list. So
I'll see if I can find it and send it to you. If it makes you feel better, I was an English lit major, and I've read 6 of the 100 books that they had on this list.
Okay.
So
well, good. Hopefully, you know, just having that one on the list makes me feel better then. So I look forward to seeing that list and seeing if there are any others. So.
I will send it to you. Maybe we can work through it together over the next several lifetimes, because they look like pretty dense books. But
sounds great.
The last question we ask of all of our podcast guests is, what is giving you energy right now?
You know, as I've gotten older and, you know, my wife and I are empty nesters now with our son being out of the house in college, I decided last fall, early winter, that we had two musical instruments sitting in our basement, one being a piano. My son's played piano since he was 8, and then he's dabbled playing the guitar a little bit. And I decided, you know, I need to learn something new and to just kind of stretch myself a little bit in terms of just some of the things that I like to do in my own time. And so I've tried to, I stress the word tried, to learn how to play the guitar since January. And so that gives me a lot of energy. There are times when I look at the guitar and think, what in the world did I do? And why am I doing this? And then there are other times that I just enjoy sitting down and being able to do the limited things that I can do with the guitar. So that's really been fun for me the last few months. So
that's awesome. I know this much about how to play a guitar. I had a friend in college who taught me how to do it, and I really liked it, but I kept getting calluses on my fingers. And then we got far enough that, is it bar chords where you press your whole finger up against the chords? My hands are too small, and so I could never make that work. And I'm like, this is not for me. I'm going to pursue other passions. Yeah. But good for you for learning something new. I think that's part of what makes life really exciting is always finding what's next. What can you grow and what can you stretch in? And guitar is a really fun one. I'm gonna see if I can find a guitar for the next time you visit our home office. You can give us a little concert.
Yeah, that'll be with all the musicians that are running around the homesteader's office. I think that I will pass on that. I'll hand the guitar to somebody else, and maybe we can invite Graham back in and he can put on a show for us.
We did end up disbanding our company band, but this could be the catalyst that reignites it. I do believe Will Bischoff is still a fairly talented musician, and he's still here, so maybe we can convince him.
Yep. Well, that's who we'll goad Will into playing a guitar song for us. And I know his some of his kids are in the Band Builders program at one of the retail stores, and maybe we can have them come in and play for us.
I think I want to say Connor is a drummer. And we don't have a drummer. Right. So there you go. That would work. We're going to work on this. For those of you who are listening, if you see Will Bischoff at an upcoming event, encourage him to rejoin the Homesteaders Band.
Yeah, I think that'd be a great idea.
Yeah, he's going to be barging into my office as soon as this podcast goes live, but that's all right. Well, Mike, thank you so much for making time for this. This has been a delightful conversation. And I know you're very busy and have a lot of people pulling in a lot of different directions. So I value the time that you spent with us today. And we wish you all the best with your guitar lessons. I hope that those go well. And I look forward to hearing updates moving forward.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate the opportunity to be here and to talk with you today, Danielle. It's been a pleasure. And I hope that we can get together and do this again sometime. And I look forward to listening to some of your previous podcasts and future podcasts as well.